Beirut, now at Harvard Kennedy School's Middle East Initiative. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 4:59. Coming up next is your KBOO Evening News. But first, this from KBOO.
KBOO proudly co-sponsors the Portland Folk Music Society concert series, featuring artists touring nationally and internationally. Shows start this September with Jim Queskin and Meredith Axelrod. The new season continues with artists Bill Staines, Radim Zenkel, and the Honey Whiskey Trio. Then 2020 kicks off with Kate Lee and Forrest O'Connor, followed by Sam Ryder and the Human Hands, Robin and Linda Williams, Pat Donahue, and Joni Harms. Portland Folk Music Society concerts are presented at the Reedwood Friends Church on Southeast Steel Street in Portland. For more information, go to the website kboo.fm and click on Community Events.
Hello, KBOO members. Thank you for being a part of our amazing community. Please join us this year at Mike to the People, our annual election meeting. Do you want to help steer KBOO in a positive direction this fall? Plan on attending the annual election meeting, Mike to the People, September 14th from noon to 3 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater and make your voice heard. Cast your vote by 1 p.m. at the event and enjoy refreshments and live entertainment with local musicians West Coast Black Bear and Izzy BM. Hear a report back from your board of directors and get to know this year's candidates. Record your fondest memories of KBOO in a minute or less at the Mic to the People booth. This is an all-ages and disability-affirmative event. Again, that's the annual election meeting, Mic to the People, Saturday, September 14th from noon to 3 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street, featuring West Coast Black Bear and Izzy BM. More information can be found at kboo.fm/meeting2019. Remember, your voice matters.
You're tuned in to community-supported KBOO Community Radio. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Grendel's Coffee House, located at East Burnside Street and 8th Avenue in Portland, offering organic coffee, daily soup specials, sandwiches, and more for breakfast and lunch. Open daily until 5 p.m. More information on the Grendel's Facebook page and by phone at 503-595-9550.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
KBOO is expecting Hurricane Dorian to hit tonight. Kirsten Gillibrand has dropped out as a presidential candidate. And in international news, two U.S.-owned firms are largely responsible for damaging the Amazon rainforest and causing the Amazon fires. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, August 28th, 2019.
I'm Claire Shadow.
And I'm Erin J. Bernard. The grass fire that consumed 50 cars and damaged 5 homes in Northeast Portland Monday was arson, authorities say. Officials did not say what led them to believe the blaze was intentionally set. A grass fire in a densely populated area of a big city is unusual, and it just happened to coincide with a late summer heat wave, which prompted authorities to issue a burn ban in the metropolitan area. No one was hurt, and firefighters were able to contain the flames to an area about the size of 2 city blocks, though there was significant property damage. Investigators would like to speak to anyone who may have seen how the fire started in the abandoned driving range.
Patriot Prayer leader, who has been known to allegedly incite violence, Joey Gibson,
has pleaded not guilty to a felony riot charge, according to Oregon Live. Gibson, who is 35 years old, pled not guilty to a charge of accusing him of starting a riot outside a Portland cidery. The right-wing leader is one of six men facing criminal charges for a physical clash between right and left-wing activists outside Portland's Cider Riot. A lawsuit has been filed by the Cider Riot owner for $1 million against Joey Gibson and four other men. Gibson has been arraigned on one count of riot, and if convicted, could face a maximum of 5 years in prison. Gibson's next scheduled court date is for October 11th.
After 50 years of being in the Title X healthcare program, Oregon has pulled out as a participant. In the past year, Title X funding has provided 44,000 Oregon women with health services. The state wanted to continue to receive grant funding. However, the Trump administration's new restrictions dictating how the money can be spent on women's reproductive health care has made this challenging. Current changes to the rule, according to OPB, quote, stops Title X money from being used to tell women about all reproductive options, including abortions. The state of Oregon said it would not spend the federal grant money until a lawsuit addressing this health restriction was settled. The federal government's response was that Oregon could either give back funding or be terminated from the grant. Oregon ultimately decided to withdraw from the grant program. Oregon Health Authority Director Patrick Allen said, quote, "We can't violate our own state laws that guarantee women full access to reproductive health services." Oregon officials state there is enough separate funding to offer reproductive health services.
The new school year is approaching, and doctors say that provides the perfect opportunity for parents to schedule wellness visits for their kids. KBOO's Althea Billings has more on this story.
As Oregon students head back to school, a visit to the doctor could be just what they need to start the year off right. Pediatrician Catherine Clark at Southern Oregon Pediatrics in Medford says the transition provides an opportunity to schedule annual exams or wellness visits for kids. Clark sees wellness visits as the jackpot of exams because doctors can offer tips for the school year, like how to deal with stress, and even catch something that could be affecting a child's health.
It's really astounding the number of times you uncover that there's been a day-to-day issue with something that wasn't ever big enough to warrant making a doctor's appointment, but its impact on how a person's feeling or their activity level could be present every single day of the week.
Wellness visits are covered for members of Jackson Care Connect and Care Oregon. The coordinated care organizations also offer a gift card to kids as an incentive to come in for their annual checkup. Deputy Health Officer at the Multnomah County Health Department, Jennifer Vines, adds there are simple ways for students to stay healthy. She says parents should teach as well as model for their kids, covering coughs and sneezes, washing their hands before eating, and staying home if they're sick. There are other basic tenets for staying healthy too.
It's getting enough sleep at night, it's getting regular physical activity, it's eating a healthy diet that has plenty of fruits and vegetables and lots of different kinds of food in it. So certainly those all contribute to wellness and may help stave off some colds and viruses and other illnesses that get passed around schools.
With an increase in the number of measles cases in Multnomah and Clackamas counties this year, Vines also suggests parents talk to their primary care providers about vaccinations. For KBOO Evening News and the Oregon News Service, I'm Althea Billings.
On Monday, a new homeless shelter called the River District Navigation Center opened in Portland's Pearl District. The River District Navigation Center has a capacity to serve up to 100 men and women. Homeless residents will have access to the shelter during the daytime and night and be provided meals, bunk beds, showers, and a laundry area. Visitors at the shelter can stay for only 90 days. The organization says it will work to provide alternative housing or shelter options prior to the 90-day cutoff. As of now, the shelter has at least 5 years on the municipal property where it sits. The Homeless Navigation Center is the finished product of the Portland nonprofit Harbor of Hope. The shelter was funded by a $3 million donation from Columbia Sportswear CEO Tim Boyle and his wife Mary Boyle. Mayor Ted Wheeler has said of the project, quote, "Harbor of Hope shows what is possible when the private sector joins nonprofit organizations and the city makes real progress in the fight against homelessness."
Senator Ron Wyden has asked for a federal investigation into the Canadian company building the pipeline necessary to bring fracked gas to the proposed Jordan Cove terminal in Coos Bay. Wyden wants the U.S. Department of Justice to investigate landowners' claims
that the Jordan Cove project and its parent company, Pembina, used abusive tactics to try to get them to agree to the construction of a pipeline on their land. The proposed Pacific Connector pipeline would cover over 229 miles from an existing hub in Malin, Oregon, on the Nevada border in Klamath County, to Jordan Cove. In January, Federal Energy Resource Commission, which had rejected the proposal during the Obama administration, will issue a final decision on permits for the project. That would also determine the exact pipeline route. Last week, the Trump administration proposed rules to streamline approval of gas pipelines and other energy projects by limiting states' authorities under the Clean Water Act.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Culture in Motion with Mike Crenshaw. At 6, it's The Underground. Then at 7, we have Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be mostly clear with a 30% chance of showers or thundershowers and a low of 65. Tomorrow, the chance of showers or thundershowers will be 40% with cloudy skies and a high of 82. Today in history, in 1968 in Chicago, tens of thousands of protesters protested against the Vietnam War while at its convention near nearby Democratic Party contentiously debated a platform statement on the war. The quote of the day is from the song Chicago by Crosby, Stills, and Nash about those riots. We can change the world, rearrange the world, it's dying to get better.
Areas of the Caribbean and southeastern United States are bracing for another hurricane season, with Hurricane Dorian currently approaching the shores of Puerto Rico, an island still recovering from the devastation of Hurricane Maria in 2017. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has declared a state of emergency for counties in Dorian's path. Federal emergency management teams are reportedly on standby, but concerns have been raised over the agency's readiness, citing a severe lack of staff and funding reported in June by interim FEMA head Peter Gaynor. Additionally, $155 million of funds have been earmarked for disaster preparedness recently, which have been diverted from the agency to fund the Trump administration's wall and border security programs. President Trump took to Twitter to assure citizens that FEMA is ready to, quote, do a great job in Puerto Rico, which he described later on Wednesday, as, quote, one of the most corrupt places on earth. The president falsely claimed that Congress had approved $92 million in aid to Puerto Rico, but of the $42.5 million that was actually approved, only $13 million have actually reached the unincorporated U.S. territory. Hurricane Dorian is expected to make landfall in Puerto Rico this evening.
Senator Kirsten Gillibrand of New York dropped out of the Democratic primary today. Gillibrand presented herself as a champion of women and families. However, she failed to qualify for the third debate next month, which proved fatal to her candidacy. Gillibrand said she would endorse another candidate in the primary, but had not yet picked one. Though she did not say she would endorse a woman, electing women to Congress is a personal cause of hers. She said, quote, I think that women have a unique ability to bring people together and heal this country. I think a woman nominee would be inspiring and exciting.
Immigrants with serious health issues who have medical deferred action were told by federal officials to leave the U.S. within 33 days. Many of these immigrants are children, being treated for illnesses like cancer, cystic fibrosis, and muscular dystrophy. On August 7th, the Trump administration ended the program that was allowing these people to stay in the U.S. for medical care. The program also allowed parents of sick children to stay in the country. Many of these people will not be able to get the medical care they need to survive when they're sent back to their home countries.
Former President Barack Obama unveiled a new initiative to combat partisan redistricting this week. The project, called Redistricting You, is a free in-person training initiative to help people understand the impact of the redistricting process and to advocate for fair maps. Partisan redistricting, or partisan gerrymandering, refers to the practice of the party in power redrawing district maps to cement their power. Quote, "It's why your district might be shaped like a corkscrew," Obama said last July, "but it's also how a party gains more seats while winning fewer votes, which isn't fair." Following the 2000 and 2010 censuses, Republicans in many states successfully redistricted congressional districts in their favor, and that has made it even more difficult for candidates of other parties to garner support. Gerrymandering comes in the form of packing, where the ruling party will either pack their opponent's constituency into one district, or cracking, where the opponent's supporters are spread in small quantities across many districts where they could never have a chance of winning. This June, the Supreme Court ruled that partisan gerrymandering is constitutional despite its detriments. The project will fight for fair electoral maps ahead of the 2020 census count and redistricting in 2021.
Up next is 2020 Talks about the 2020 presidential campaigns and the opioid crisis.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 election process. A landmark decision in Oklahoma ruled earlier this week to hold Johnson & Johnson accountable for its part in the opioid crisis. Cleveland County District Judge Thad Balkman ruled that the company had been misleading in its marketing of opioids.
This opioid epidemic has just affected everyone, no matter if they're Prince, who we lost in Minnesota, celebrities like him, or whether it is a high school swimmer in a small town, or whether it is a young man on Mille Lacs Reservation.
That was Minnesota Senator and presidential candidate Amy Klobuchar. Many Democratic candidates on their way across Iowa have touched on what they would do to help solve the opioid crisis. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders is known for railing against pharmaceutical companies. Earlier this month, Sanders compared the opioid crisis to gun violence.
And what we need to do right now is to hold those gun manufacturers responsible if they are selling guns far more into a community than they should. Exactly the same thing with opioid manufacturers who are selling zillions of pills to communities that cannot accommodate or should not have that many pills.
Several candidates, who are also members of Congress, have introduced legislation on the opioid crisis. And in some ways, they have a leg up in the race. They're well established in American politics. But in the 2016 election, Americans didn't vote for an established politician. They voted for businessman and television personality Donald Trump. And this election season is seeing more non-career politicians entering the race, with candidates like entrepreneur Andrew Yang, author and spiritual guide Marianne Williamson, and comedian Ben Glebe. Glebe wants to hear less from politicians and more from voters. He proposed a plan that he calls Connected Democracy. If elected president, whenever he proposes an executive order, he plans to ask American people to vote for or against it by blockchain, a secure internet method of verification.
When it was first presented to me, this concept, I said older people aren't going to use it. And it turns out they actually are more excited about it than younger people. It will be available also at libraries, and we're trying to get it available to post offices. You have to do very little to make the vote work.
And even though he hasn't been on a debate stage yet, Glebe thinks he has the right attitude and skill set to take on President Trump.
We're going to lose again. And I'm a stand-up comedian. That's my job, my whole career, and a TV host. And that's Trump was a TV host, but he's not a comedian, he's a heckler. That's what his best skill is, talking trash and heckling people. And the most surefire way to take down a heckler is with a comedian. I've done it my whole career. I've never lost to a heckler. And I do not intend to start now.
From Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Lily Bolke. Thanks for listening at pacificanetwork.org and publicnewsservice.org.
Donald Trump has reportedly told aides he will pardon them for any laws they might break in order to get hundreds of miles of border fence built before the 2020 election. According to a report in the Washington Post, the president has ordered officials to ignore environmental rules, fast-track construction contracts, and, quote, take the land through eminent domain, according to the Washington Post. The wall was one of Trump's key campaign promises, and he hopes that coming through on that promise will help his chances of re-election. In July, the Supreme Court ruled that Trump could use around $2.5 billion in Pentagon funds on the border wall.
On Tuesday, at least 15 of Jeffrey Epstein's accusers had their day in court to recount their abuse. However, with Epstein's apparent suicide, the powerful statements made by these women will no longer aid any federal sex trafficking charges against Epstein. During the Tuesday hearing, prosecutors asked for a dismissal of the indictment against Epstein. Judge Richard Berman, who presided over the case, allowed the victims to share their stories anyway. Judge Berman said, quote, "I believe it is the court's responsibility to ensure that the victims in this case are treated fairly and with dignity. Several of the victims are asking prosecutors to continue investigating Epstein's alleged abuse and those of potential co-conspirators. One co-conspirator, Ghislaine Maxwell, a British socialite and former girlfriend of Epstein, has been accused of facilitating Epstein's abuse towards young women and girls. Accuser and survivor Virginia Roberts Giuffre said Epstein kept her as a sex slave. Maxwell has denied these allegations. Robert Giuffre said in court, quote, "This is not about how he died, but about how he lived."
Purdue Pharma, the maker of OxyContin, is offering between $10 and $12 billion in a potential settlement in an Ohio lawsuit regarding the opioid epidemic. There are actually over 2,000 lawsuits against the company from different localities. The Sackler family, which owns the company, would relinquish the company and contribute $3 billion in personal funds to the settlement, which would also involve declaring bankruptcy. This follows the landmark ruling out of Oklahoma on Monday, which fined Johnson & Johnson and their subsidiary Janssen $500 million in damages for their part in the opioid crisis. Purdue settled separately in Oklahoma for $270 million this March. Purdue is largely blamed for starting the prescription opioid crisis with the introduction of OxyContin in 1996. The company aggressively marketed the drug to doctors, calling it magic and downplaying its addictive nature. According to a Massachusetts lawsuit, the Sackler family paid itself nearly $4.3 billion for the sale of its drugs between 2008 and 2016.
Now it's time for the daily national newscast from the Public News Service. The Public News Service has bureaus in 36 states dedicated to news in the public interest.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for Wednesday, August 28, 2019. I'm Mike Clifford. A major storm heads for Puerto Rico. Is the Department of Homeland Security prepared? Also on our nationwide rundown, efforts to help preschoolers flourish and remembering overdose victim. First, here's our top story. As a major storm heads for Puerto Rico, National Public Radio is reporting the Department of Homeland Security and its Federal Emergency Management Agency said Tuesday that they'll move $271 million in funds to support President Trump's border enforcement efforts. DHS says it will transfer the emergency funds, including $155 million from FEMA's disaster aid relief, to support new immigration and customs enforcement detention beds, as well as fertility, according to documents obtained by NPR that includes facilities for related court cases. More low-income preschoolers in the Baltimore area will likely be ready when kindergarten starts next week because of their time at what are commonly known as the Judy Centers.
The Baltimore Community Foundation is a supporter of the Judith P. Hoyer Center Early Learning Hubs. Billy Malcolm, program officer at the foundation, says 55% of all kindergartners in Baltimore City Judy Centers are ready to learn, according to the state's latest kindergarten reading assessment. That's compared to 39% in the city and 47% of preschoolers overall in the state.
When you provide the proper support for families and children, you're getting them outperforming their peers by, in this case, about 16 points, and even the state by 8 points. And that excites me very much.
As of 2018, 56 Judy Centers, which are located in Title I schools, serve more than 15,000 children in every county in the state, providing full-day, full-year services. I'm Diane Bernard reporting.
The foundation is funding the Leading Men program until 2021.
People in Idaho will be on the steps of the state capitol building Thursday, that to remember the lives lost in the last year to overdose. More in a story from our Eric Tiganoff.
In 2018, 249 people died by overdose, and each death will be symbolized with a balloon tied to a pair of shoes. Chris Meekum is with the Peer Wellness Center, a recovery community center in Boise that is sponsoring the Overdose Awareness Day event. He points out that overdoses are preventable, and there are ways to support folks on their road to recovery.
Destigmatizing the language that we use around people looking for recovery and communicating that recovery is possible and worth the effort. Those are the two most important messages I think we can send the public.
Meekum notes overdoses from all drugs in Idaho were up by 10% last year.
This is PNS. As the days start to cool in states like Michigan now, some folks might be able to offset the cost of summer utility bills with the Michigan Home Heating Credit.
Eligible households that paid for heat last winter have until September 30th to apply for the 2018 Home Heating Credit. Ross Yednock with the Community Economic Development Association of Michigan says both homeowners and renters can apply.
It's called the Home Heating Credit, but it's really a energy credit designed to really help folks pay for the heating last year. The last thing you're thinking about is turning on the furnace, but if you've got current costs, it will go towards your current bill.
Yednock says those who paid money directly to a provider of fuel, heating oil, or wood last year will receive the refund instead of a bill credit. He adds that because the Home Heating Credit doesn't require a person to file a state income tax return to be claimed, it is often overlooked.
And a block has been upheld now on an Indiana law that opponents say would threaten the integrity of the voting process. Senior staff attorney with Indiana's ACLU, Gavin Rose, explains that Hoosiers could have been removed from the rolls without any notice or even a waiting period.
The system that the state sought to incorporate is not 100% reliable. And if you even run the risk of purging Jane Smith from the voter rolls when Jane Smith very much wants to show up and vote, that is a very, very serious problem in our democratic form of government.
The Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals Tuesday affirmed a preliminary injunction on the 2017 law that would have allowed the state to kick people off the voter rolls based solely on information from the cross-check program. And finally, Ross Brown reports a case that began back in 2010 back in the news this week. That is the Atomic Safety and Licensing Board. Here's arguments between a uranium mining company and a local Sioux tribe.
The hearing will decide if the mining company PowerTech is required to conduct a cultural study at its proposed mine site near the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. Jeff Parsons is an attorney for the tribe and says a federal judge already ruled that the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission acted illegally when it issued the 2014 mining license because a cultural resource study was not conducted.
It is not rocket science to conduct a cultural resources survey on a site like this. It's just that the company in this case refuses to spend the money, and the NRC staff refuses to hold the company's feet to the fire and make them comply with the federal law.
The hearing today comes after the NRC declared a stalemate between PowerTech and the Sioux tribe and asked the Atomic Safety and Licensing Board to step in. By the way, that proposed mine site is 13 miles northwest of Edgemont and about 50 miles from Pine Ridge. I'm Mike Clifford for Public News Service. We are member and listener supported, and we are online at publicnewsservice.org.
Up next is Current Cast, where today we will hear about possible oil pipeline ruptures seeping into drinking water.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Location, location, location. It's a truism not only for real estate, but for wind farms too. It makes sense to put them where wind is plentiful, but often that's in rural areas, far from where the energy is needed. Sarah Webster is with Pattern Energy, a company that's building and operating wind farms in eastern New Mexico.
It's like the Saudi Arabia of wind. You want to harness that because the better the wind, the cheaper the price of the wind.
She says that price can be as little as 2 cents per kilowatt hour.
That's unbelievable. There's no other electricity on the planet that's able to do that.
But there's a catch. The region's wind resource is huge, but its demand for electricity is not. So Pattern Energy is also developing long-haul transmission lines. The goal is to carry clean, renewable power from eastern New Mexico to the existing grid farther west.
And that takes a tremendous amount of community engagement, regulatory engagement.
So it's a long-term, challenging effort, but with a big upside. The company expects wind power from the region to be cost competitive even after transmission, and that means harnessing it could help get more clean energy on the grid. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
Two Brazilian firms owned by the giant U.S. investment firm, Blackstone, are major players in destroying the Amazon rainforest and in facilitating the agriculture that caused the gigantic fires there. Blackstone's co-founder and CEO, Stephen Schwarzman, is a close ally of President Trump and has donated millions of dollars to Senator Mitch McConnell in recent years. Besides seizing land and deforesting it, the two companies, Hidrovias do Brasil and Patria Investments, helped build a controversial highway to their New River Terminal in the one-time jungle. Providing farmers a better way to get their products to market will increase the amount of land cleared for grain, soybeans, and cattle.
Now on Current Cast, we'll hear about possible oil pipelines rupturing and seeping into drinking water.
Oil and water in the Straits of Mackinac on this Current Cast. Every day, about 20 million gallons of oil travel through an underwater pipeline at the narrow passage that connects Lakes Michigan and Huron.
And there's a lot of concerns that this line could rupture.
That's Mike Schreiberg of the National Wildlife Federation, which helps organize the Great Lakes Business Network. It's a coalition of more than 90 business leaders lobbying to end the use of this pipeline. Many of their companies, from breweries to outdoor outfitters, depend on the water and tourism it generates.
They're not saying we want to shut down the